Hello and welcome to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers blog. Today's show is all about Kevin Love and his four-year, $120 million extension. It's a five-year commitment to Kevin Love by the Cavs and by Kevin Love to the Cavaliers for about $145 million. It is a very interesting deal on a number of levels. We're going to be talking a lot about this deal for the next week, so if you're into Kevin Love content, this is the podcast for you. Mo Dockhill will be on the show later this week, as will Jordan Zerm, so if you want to hear from two of my favorite people to talk about basketball with, stay tuned to Locked On Cavs. On today's show, though, we're starting with Jeff Siegel, one of my favorite writers who you can read at Fear the Sword, Blazer's Edge, Early Bird Writes, and now Forbes, Dime Magazine. He's a great, great writer, and you're going to love his perspective on Kevin Love, how it impacts the cap sheet, Colin Sexton's impact in this deal, and a whole bunch more. If you aren't already, you can find Locked On Cavaliers on iTunes, Stitcher, Megaphone, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. A five-star review is the best way to support the show. Be like an honored J.R. Smith with a five-star review. That's all you got to do. You can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Writes. In the next coming days, please stay tuned to Fear the Sword for all of the latest Cavs news, reaction to the Kevin Love extension, and a whole bunch more. But without further ado, here's Jeff and I talking about the Kevin Love trade from every angle. Talk to you again tomorrow. You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Jeff, Kevin Love has this big contract. He gets the four-year, $120 million extension. It commits him to the Cavs for the next five seasons. He'll be 30 in the fall. This effectively, assuming the Cavs, you know, trade him in the length of the deal, which is possible. And I've actually seen a lot more speculation about that and kind of comparing it to the Blake Griffin deal than I would have expected. This is the biggest move of the Cavs offseason, besides LeBron by far. It's the first significant move they've really made since LeBron went to the Lakers. When you see this come through, when you see that Kevin Love has signed this four-year, $120 million extension, what is your initial reaction?
I think it's a good deal for him. I think it's somebody, you know, before he gets to be the number one option, he gets paid like a number one option before he has to prove that he again can be that. And so he locks it in for the next 4 years after this coming year. And, you know, he's now set for, you know, pretty much the rest of his functional career. Maybe he'll have a couple of years on the back end where he's sort of floating around the league on smaller contracts, but this is it for him. And to commit himself back to Cleveland is something, I guess, that is interesting considering how his tenure has gone so far, with, you know, being the third banana and then the second banana, and now he's going to be the number one guy. So it certainly was interesting. It's great for him in terms of what he, you know, what he's getting out of it. Of course, you know, with an extra 4 years of guaranteed money, no options, no nothing on either end of that. So he's going to get his money. And so it's obviously, you know, really good for him personally. And I think it's going to be a good deal for the Cavs. You know, I think the initial reaction from me is that he's going to be tradable for the next 2 years on that contract. Maybe after that, you start to see him slow down a little bit, but certainly a guy who can function at the elbow and shoot and pass is always going to have value. And he's not, you know, if he slows down defensively, like how much is that hurting you? Cause he was already slow. So, you know, unless he, you know, really turns into like Dirk Nowitzki, I think he's going to be fine over the length of this deal.
Yeah, I am good with it for a couple of reasons. I for number one, I think from his perspective, I do not know this. I do not know this to be a fact, but I would guess that considering how early he signed this deal, considering he was willing to wait to basically agree to opt out of that deal the last year of his contract and sign this and commit himself now, maybe indicates to me that him and his agent, which he's got a very good agent who I won't name, but there may be some concern that even in a summer where there's a lot of money, I wonder if they just felt like, I like the situation, I like the where this could be headed to at least some degree, I'm comfortable here. I want to make sure I'm getting the most money I can, because I think this is a good deal. I think this is fine, considering it, you know, we'll get into this. You wrote about this. It doesn't totally kill the cap space by any means, but it's a lot of money for what Kevin Love is and sort of how I think the perception of Kevin Love has been. And you're right, like, they are paying him like he's the number one option, the face of the franchise, when he hasn't had to be that for four seasons. LeBron has been that. Kyrie was ahead of him in the pecking order as well. He's had some injuries, which we'll talk about. But that to me is one of the reactions. I just wonder if Kevin Love and his agent and his team are like, okay, I like the situation. The Cavs called me. They made it clear they want to keep me. I believe in this vision to some degree, and I think this is the right, at the very least, I'm getting my money. He secured his bag. Kevin Love secured his bag and has set himself up for the rest of the prime of his career. He's going to get paid through age 34. This is a very good deal for him, as much as I think it makes sense for the Cavs. It's also interesting that the Cavs are sort of indicating that they do want to try to be as competitive this season. Now, they could flip George Hill at some point. There's already been the rumors about Kyle Korver. They have some, you know, what happens with JR and others guys. And they also have incentive to play Jetty Osman, to play Colin Sexton, to play Ante Zizic, and to let those guys make mistakes, because that is going to make them better players. They're in this weird balance where I made this analogy on Twitter, and it's not perfect, but they didn't go full 76ers, full trust the process. They decided, hey, we're going to do what the Jazz sort of did. We're going to try to not bottom out after we lose our best player. And they don't have a Gobert. They didn't draft the Donovan Mitchell, as far as we know. Maybe Colin Sexton blows everybody away, and that happens. But they're in a situation where they want to try to toe that line of, we're going to keep developing guys, and we're going to try to win games, because you don't pay Kevin Love this much money if you're not at least trying to be competitive. And that is also interesting because they have that top 10 protected pick that goes to the Hawks one of the next 2 years. And I think the general consensus on that pick would be, you want to keep that pick because having top 10 picks is a good thing for your long-term development. And you want to be able to get top 10 talents, even if they're not in the best draft classes. Like, next year is expected to not be a great draft class, from as far as we know. Getting other top 10 talents and having higher picks and having chances at maybe jumping way up the lottery is the best way to build long-term.
Yeah, it certainly be the extension does indicate that at least for this season they're going to try to be competitive, which probably does mean that Hawks pick is going to go, because it's, you know, even if they are competitive but aren't, you know, in the, you know, it don't even make the playoffs, they're still going to be sort of in that 12 to 14 range, I would imagine. And so that unless they get super lucky in the lottery, which can happen for the Cavaliers certainly over the last few years, they're going to, I think they will convey that pick. And so, you know, it's sort of something that they had to balance against, you know, bottoming out, is the fact that they do owe this pick, and the fact that Love, you know, is under contract for this coming year. They have a lot of veterans already under contract. Really cleaning house to lose down into that bottom 10 was going to be difficult, because there are a handful of teams, you know, below them. You know, I guess if they had been able to trade Love, then certainly they would have been able to bottom out, even with guys like Hill, Smith, Korver, and Tristan Thompson on the roster. That's not a roster that is going to get out of the top 10 of the draft. But with Love now, they can really make a push for the playoffs. You know, I think they should be favored to make the playoffs. Like, I think they're a better team right now with Love at the helm than, say, like Detroit. I think I would have them ahead of Miami, but that's sort of you know, that's a toss-up. All three of those teams are going to compete for those last two spots in the playoffs, I think. And so it's, you know, it's certainly, it's a calculus that they, you know, that they've clearly made, that they want to continue to stay competitive. And certainly, I think for a guy like Dan Gilbert, who has shelled out a ton of money over the last few years to keep the team, you know, high-end competitive, getting that extra playoff revenue next year, even if it's $5 million extra dollars from, you know, from the two home games, even if they don't make it out of the first round, that's, you know, that's significant to him. And I think, you know, this indicates that they're, you know, going to go for that.
I just want to say, and I know we're not going to talk about this, but I'm just going to say, it's not an accident that they had Kevin Love sign his contract at the Key Renovations when in front of a bunch of people that were doing construction work on the arena. I'm just going
to
say that.
That was super weird. Like, it was just so strange to see, like, why there of all, you know, it was very PR-y. It was very like, oh, we can have a nice photo with him with all of the gritty, hardworking Cleveland folks. Like, I understand it. You know, it's a nice story, but in this day and age, I think people see right through that. And I think it was, you know, very much a PR stunt rather than anything. I mean, how could it not be really a PR stunt? That was a very weird picture and a very weird move from them. But certainly, you know, from a cap perspective, it makes sense to, you know, I wrote about this a little bit for Fear the Sword. If they had waited until mid-August to do this deal, he can't be traded after an extension for 6 months. So they would have pushed it past the date that he would have been able to be traded this year, past the trade deadline. So if he had waited until like mid-August, he can't be traded. So maybe they sort of a little bit sort of pushed like, oh, let's get this deal signed in July and we can do this thing with the construction workers. And secretly it's like, oh, well, by the end of January, he'll be trade eligible if things, you know, go the wrong way.
It would be kind of, to me, surprising if they did do that. I think based on what I understand about what they want to do, I'd be surprised if they pull the plug that quickly. But, you know, things could go really badly in a hurry and that could happen. Or maybe he gets disgruntled or whatever. But, okay, he also, like, the suit he wore and, like, the hard hat and, like, the selfie and everything. It felt like he was like a gubernatorial candidate, you know, like stopping at a rally and like getting a selfie in with the crowd. Like I was like, oh,
yeah,
this is what this
feels
like.
That's a good way to put it. It was very much like a political candidate being like, hey, I'm one of the guys when I just signed a $120 million contract.
Yeah, I'm very rich and yeah.
It's, and I'm just standing here with you people, but this is the last time, unless you buy a ticket, it's the last time I'm ever going to be in the same room with you guys. Exactly. It was a little weird, but understandable.
Yeah, and I also think the Cavs are doing what they're doing right now because they are trying to sell this vision past LeBron, and I think in this city in particular, I do think they feel as if, and I think they're right to think this, that LeBron gives you this imagination within the city. That gives you this place in the city atop the pecking order. When you don't have LeBron, historically the Cavs have probably been the third team, and I think that in a world where baseball is just not as popular, I wonder if they can settle in at number two. But the Browns are on their way up right now. The Indians are very, very good right now with Ramirez and Lindor and all this stuff. So I wonder if there's just some concern there, making sure they keep that, you know, they're in the sports consciousness of the city. And I wonder if that's part of it as well. Whether that's effective or not, it's not an important conversation. But we'll get to the downsides of this deal in a second. But when you look at the what intrigues you moving forward, what stands out to you is like the thing about this in this that now that he's the, at least, you know, for this year and we maybe this whole deal, that he is the center of this. What most intrigues you about how Kevin Love is now for the second time in his career, but in a way we probably wouldn't have expected would happen? What intrigues you about him being the number one guy in a team again?
I think it's going to be fascinating to see how much of 2014 Kevin Love still remains. I mean, it's so long ago that people, you know, don't really remember as well as they probably should. But he was one of the best offensive players in the league. Second team All-NBA in 2013-14, came back from an injury and just was dominant that year and was dominant on the glass, was, you know, 25-12 and just, you know, they ran everything through him at the elbows. And like, just if we can find, if that guy still exists in him, he's going to have, you know, this is going to be, it's going to be, you know, a phenomenal team to watch this year. They're going to be so interesting. It's going to take a lot of the point guard duties sort of out of the hands of a guy like Colin Sexton, who is not going to step in and be a winning point guard from day one. You know, maybe on the defensive end, he can just sort of grit it out, but I don't think Sexton is going to step in and be a positive offensive point guard if he had the ball every time down. I think Hill will start even with Sexton coming in off the bench. If he's playing with Love, you can run a lot of stuff through Love and then use Sexton as more of a screener cutter, you know, in that role rather than as a primary ball handler. So I think it's certainly going to be really interesting to see how Love, how, you know, we've seen obviously that LeBron surrounded with shooters was fantastic offensively. Love surrounded with the same level of shooters, because a lot of these guys are the same guys as last year. It's going to be interesting to see how they sort of pivot toward a more stationary Love, you know, because obviously LeBron is more of a drive and dish guy. Love is going to be a post up and pass guy. You know, how they really go to him, if they really go to him a lot like they did in Minnesota. You know, it's not super clear whether he still has that sort of innate passing ability, whether being out of practice for 4 years, he's going to have some rust to sort of to knock off. And I think that's the biggest thing for me. How much of an offensive dip are they going to take? What is the offense going to look like? How much is Love going to be able to orchestrate things from the elbow?
I mean, Ty is going to be basically designing a new offense. I think we have to expect that they're going to have to run completely different sets or at least very, very altered versions of what they did last year. We're going to take a quick break, and then you're going to be back to talk more about the Kevin Love extension and what it means for the Cavs. Okay, we are back looking at the Kevin Love extension. Jeff Siegel from Fear the Sword, Early Bird Rights, and all that, and all those various sites he writes for is my guest. The downside of this deal, Kevin Love has missed 55 games in the last two seasons. They are hand injuries, back injuries, has had knee surgery. He's going to be 34 at the end of this deal. He could be in a lot of physical limited player at that time. We already see some of the limitations he has athletically just because of what he is. I think you agree with this. This money is not necessarily unmovable. And if he has like a really big 2014 type season in a year or 6 months or whatever, maybe there's some team that talks himself into him as the big piece, right? Maybe some team gives up a slew of young assets and the Cavs get a really good return on him and they go in all in the rebuild. But I think considering the Cavs have a good medical staff, considering some of the, I think it's fair to say some of the injuries he's have been kind of fluky. Like that hand injury was just a weird situation where his hand got caught and it snapped, and that's just really bad luck for him. He's had a lot. I think the Kelly Olynyk thing was more situational than Kevin Love is fragile. I don't think overall I feel like there is a lot of super problematic risk. Like I feel. Like, I've seen some people compare this to the Blake Griffin deal. I think this is a way less risky deal than giving all the money that the Clippers and then the Pistons are not paying to Blake Griffin.
Yeah, I don't, I think it's relatively similar in sort of their duration and the fact that it is a lot of money to give to a power forward who you're not 100% sure is going to be the best player, on your team. But of course, Love is making sort of second banana type money, even though he's going to be, making $120 million over the 4 years. Like in this day and age with the cap sort of where it is, that's not, if you're trying to compete at the top of either conference, that's more of a second or even maybe a third banana type money. So it's going to be interesting to see how he ages. Like you said, I think some of those injuries are a little flukier and aren't really indicative of his long-term health, but you those little things sort of add up over the years, and he's going to be 34 by the end of the deal. Those last 2 years of the extension might be a little bit more, he might be more of a negative value on the back end than he will on the front end, of course. So there is an argument to be made, a criticism to be made of the Cavaliers of like, if a lot of the present value of the contract comes up front and then the back end is where you really pay for it, what are they really getting with the front end of this contract? They're going to try to compete next year and I guess in 2019 and 2020, but by 21, he's going to start to slow down a little bit. And I think it's fair to argue that his game won't slow down as much as a guy like Blake Griffin, who has developed a lot of skills but still is reliant on some of his athleticism more than Love is. Love has never been a good defender. So if he slows down on that end, like it's just going to get, he was already being targeted on every possession. So it's fine. In a way, it's kind of weird that it's fine. But I guess that's just sort of the way it's going to be for him long term. And he's going to slow down. It's going to continue to be targeted. And as an offensive player, he's always going to be able to be big and get position and pass from the post. And he's got all the little dark secrets about getting fouled down there, and he'll be able to shoot until the day he dies. So there's always that. And so like, he's going to be, the Dirk Nowitzki comparisons are apt, I think, in terms of how he's going to age. And, we saw with Dirk that it took Dirk a long time to get to the point where he is literally almost unplayable defensively. But Love's not going to, they're not under contract with him until he's 40. He'll be 34 at the end of the deal, and then they can figure it out at the end.
I think the other thing about this that I feel okay with is that you're hoping, I think, by the time he's a little bit older and is maybe a little bit slower, maybe a little bit more broken down, a little more limited, you're hoping, I think, by that point that Jedi Osman, that Colin Sexton are ready to do more. And I think that would sort of allow Kevin Love to settle into the things he does well, the picking and popping, the elbow work, the passing. I think the thing I'm really excited to see is what they can do with him as a passer in this new offense, what Ty designs there. I think this will honestly be a good gauge of how creative Ty Ron Lue is a coach. And I think that's sort of interesting to see. I think I'm overall good with it. I think you certainly, I think, could move on from him in a year or two if you really needed to. I don't know if you, depending on what his health is like, that'll impact it. But I don't see a lot of downs in moving forward. And I think the other part of it is that it doesn't really hurt them in the cap, right? Like, this is an albatross that's going to eat up their money going forward and push them into a tough situation. As you have calculated over at Early Bird Rights, and people should go check out those cap sheets and just look at this. It adds $3 million to the payroll next year. That's not really much. Had he opted out, they would have had to give him a lot of money anyway. He took about $8 million less than the max he could have taken. This isn't a team that's going to have a lot of use of cap space anyway. They're gonna tie up more money, I think, with Larry Nance going forward and Rodney Hood and a Jedi Osman contract a few years off the books. In 2020 is when it would get a little bit tight. But you're hoping, I think, you're getting young guys, you're developing young guys, you're having the guys you have now under controllable contracts. You know, you don't have to pay Jordan Clarkson then, you don't have to pay Tristan Thompson then. Some of the worst money comes off your books. I don't think financially it's really all that bad either, and I think they're going to be an expensive team for what they might be this year, even in the year, the next couple of years as these guys develop and things sort of play out how they play out. But I don't think financially this is particularly bad either. It's maybe a little bit higher than what his market value would have been next summer, but I don't think it's so much more or so much of a problem because of what Kevin Love is and how good he is and the fact that there's just no way they were going to replace him. And it doesn't also just seem like the market for him was particularly robust in as far as a trade chip anyway.
Yeah, I think the fact that he got paid probably more than he would have gotten paid next year is sort of that's the trade-off that they made in terms of understanding that he is now on the books and they can plan their long-term future with, you know, knowing that he's under contract till 2023 rather than, you know, okay, we play out the year and we have all these plans for 2019 free agency, but Love is great and now he opts out and wants, you know, $35 million. Like, that's a big difference from the 29 roughly that he'll make next year. So, you know, I think from that perspective, you know, probably they overpaid a little bit to lock him in for the 4 years, but I think that they can really move forward with knowing, okay, we're going to go into 2019 with, you know, $20 to $25 million in cap space, depending on what happens with Larry Nance, Rodney Hood, their draft picks, et cetera. We'll see sort of where they end up, but, you know, they can move on from Hill and Smith and Korver within the, you know, over the next 12 months, and they can really, you know, they can really navigate themselves to about $20 to $25 million in space, even, you know, calculating in a Hood, you know, a new contract for Hood and an extension for Larry Nance. So, you know, they've got some wiggle room, and it doesn't really impact them as much because Love was going to either pick up his $25 million, you know, option next year or was going to sort of need a new contract anyway. So they're taking away a little bit of the risk that he'll play super well and need a max contract, you know, a 35% max, but they're also sort of locking themselves in that if he has a bad year, then, you know, they could have re-signed him for $20 million. Then, you know, that's the risk they're taking here. But I think, you know, overall, I think it's a fine deal. I think any time before the 2020 trade deadline, they're going to be able to move him pretty easily. You know, there are always going to be teams who need a jolt from their offensive position, you know, their offense in that way. The same way that, you know, we thought that Blake Griffin's deal was, you know, sort of an albatross. As soon as it was signed, people were like, this is one of the worst contracts in the league. And then he got moved for a great group of assets. So, you know, Love's deal is nowhere near that level in terms of, you know, how much money they owe him. It's just as long in terms of, you know, because his contract doesn't kick in until next year. So I think they're going to be fine. I think they're happy with the way it worked out. And obviously they're going to have the cap space in 2019. Everybody comes off the books except for Love, Sexton, and Ante Zizic by 2020. Of course, Rodney Hood, Larry Nance, you know, Chetty Osman are all, you know, probably going to be on the team by that point. But certainly by 2020, they're going to have a ton of space, and they could really, you know, very quickly, you know, move into the next era of Cavs basketball.
I think moving forward, the other interesting part about this, I think the most interesting part about it in the short term and in the long term overall is how this is going to affect Jetty Osman and Colin Sexton. I think Zizic is less interesting. I think what they do with him this year is going to be really interesting, because if they try to win, there's an argument to be made that you should just play Thompson, Nance, and Love, and there's not a room for Zizic there, but I'm of the mind that you should play him. But with Sexton, I think Jetty, I think you could see him kind of doing some really interesting stuff. And you made the comparison in our notes to that maybe it's like a Corey Brewer thing, like Minnesota. He cuts, he shoots, he gets out hard in transition, and there's some of that dynamic there. With Sexton, he's going to struggle, I think, offensively. He's going to make a lot of mistakes, but it gives him someone he can lean on along with George Hill. I think he's going to be able to cut around the screens. He's going to be able to learn, just have someone he can lean on to be a hub of an offense and not be thrown that burden from day one. I really like giving Colin Sexton, who struggled a little bit to kind of keep things moving in summer league, and I don't know about his college game necessarily, but just that seems to be something he's really going to have to work on. I think the ability to give him a guy who is an offensive hub, and the Cavs are going to probably treat as an offensive hub for his rookie season, is a really good support system. And it'll help Jetty too. Jetty's going to create more this year. He should get opportunities to do it. But having Kevin Love there to just be the center of everything and not make these guys have to do everything when there might not be ready to stretch themselves that much, I think is a really positive thing for the development. And it gives you an idea, I think, of what the Cavs are going to do for as far as development goes. They are going to let these guys, I think, play, make mistakes. They're going to still try to win, but they're also going to give them support and not throw them to the wolves. And there's probably a limit to that. Like, Korver's probably tradable. George Hill at the right price is probably gettable from another team. But this tells us that they're certainly at least willing to go out and pay and not leave these guys like in a complete abyss.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be good for Sexton, a guy who, you know, I have some worries about how he would run an offense all by himself. You know, he's got some support around him. Obviously, they were going to have Love this year, unless they found a trade for him. They were going to have Love this year as Sexton sort of grows into that role. But now now Sexton can really look at Love and be like, okay, this is my guy for my whole rookie contract, basically, and even into Sexton's fifth year because of the length of Love's extension. So I think, you know, I think Sexton is going to be the main beneficiary of this in terms of his development and how he'll be able to come along pretty slowly while still being in a competitive environment where, you know, where he'll thrive because of his, you know, level of competitiveness and the toughness that he showed in college. So I think there's a strong argument to be made that Sexton will be the biggest beneficiary of the Love extension, obviously, other than Love himself, who, you know, of course got his money. So, you know, outside of that, I think Osman was going to step into a bigger role no matter what. And he sort of, you know, he's shown some more ability. I thought he was somebody who should have played more, frankly, in the playoffs last year, and certainly will have, you know, have his opportunities this year, and with LeBron off the team and the team sort of taking a little bit of a step back, he'll have more chances, I would expect, this year to do all the little things that he does really well. He's going to play really well off of Love. Whether how he develops his you know, his game for the future with Love, you know, as the hub of the offense remains to be seen. I'm not sure that he's, you know, other than just getting better at the things he's already good at, I'm not sure that he's going to discover a new skill that's going to be brought out by Love. But certainly as a floor runner, as a cutter, as a shooter, as a little bit of a ball handler, Osman is going to benefit a ton from having Love on the team.
We'll wrap it up on three kind of quick questions here. Number one, what do you think this team's outlook is for the season? Number two, What is it with Kevin Love back and knowing he, and just kind of thinking about this roster a little bit more in full, what do you think is the best starting lineup for this team this year, and what is your final grade for this extension?
All right, so starting with the first one was how well are they going to do? I think they're going to be right in there with the 7, 8, 9 seeds with Detroit and Miami. You know, I think a team, you know, so obviously the big three of Toronto, Boston, Philly are going to be above them. Indiana and Milwaukee are probably in that next tier below them. Washington sort of feels like they're in a tier by themselves in that sixth spot. And then it's going to be 7, 8, 9, Detroit, Miami, Cleveland. And how that shakes out is probably going to come down to not as much of how Love plays, but how many games is he out there? You know, is he going to pick up one of these little injuries and play 60 games, or is he going to play 75 games? And so it's going to be, you know, that's going to be almost more important than, you know, is he ultra efficient or just relatively efficient as that sort of elbow playmaker slash scorer slash post scorer slash shooter. Like all of the roles that he plays, just having him out there is going to be the most important thing for Cleveland. You know, I don't think that they're going to be particularly good defensively this year, but, you know, they're going to try a lot harder this year because they're going to have to, because they're not going to have the crutch of, oh, our offense is otherworldly. They're going to have to sort of balance a little more between offense and defense. And so, you know, I think they, you know, I think they will get it done. I do think that they're going to be one of the teams that does make the playoffs out of that tier. If I had to pick a team out of those three who misses out, I think I would go with Detroit just because of the new coach and the new system and some, you know, Blake Griffin still sort of getting used to the way that they're going to play under a new coach in Dwayne Casey. So I think Cleveland will make it in with along with Miami, but it's going to be, you know, it's going to be super interesting to watch that three-man playoff race. I don't think that any team from below that, like Charlotte or the Knicks or the Bulls, even with Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine, I don't expect any of those guys to jump up and really compete for the playoffs. But I guess, you know, there's always one team out of the bottom that you really never see coming. So there might be a little bit more, you know, competition for those last spots in the playoffs. So it's going to be a dog race, I think, all, you know, it's going to be a dog fight all year. And you know, the Cleveland is going to have to, you know, have to be ready for that. What was the second question? I can't remember now.
The second question is, what do you think just give me five names, best starting lineup for the Cavs with Kevin Love, obviously in it this year.
George Hill, J.R. Smith, Chetty Osman, Kevin Love, and Tristan Thompson would be my starting lineup. Assuming, I guess we have to assume that Rodney Hood will be back. I still think I'd start, I guess if Hood's back, then I guess I'd start him over Osman at the beginning of the year. But I think by the end and by the time they're closing games, closing competitive games, I think Osman will be a better choice than Hood.
And then what would your overall grade be, like your letter grade in this deal?
I think I'd give it probably a B, B plus. I think it's a solid deal. It's probably a little bit more than I think, you know, their average outcome they would have to pay in 2019 for him. But if he has a really good year, like I sort of expect him to have as that elbow playmaker and as the number one option, then they did save, you know, maybe $7 million in terms of what they would have had to pay him on a full-blown max in 2019. You know, maybe they wouldn't have had to pay a full max, but they certainly saved if he's going to be a great player. If he sort of flames out and it doesn't go very well, you know, there's going to be a team out there who can talk themselves into what he brings to the table, and the price point I think makes sense for them on that front as well, whether he's good or bad. Whether, you know, obviously if he's bad, then the trade value goes down, but, you know, I think it's something that it's a deal that they can get off of when if they need to within the next couple of years, and it's a deal that they'd love to have if he, you know, if he steps back into his role like he was with the 2014 Minnesota Timberwolves. And then of course the fact that it doesn't really impact their 2019 space, it doesn't really, you know, it sort of solidifies their future as sort of a competitive team in 2019 and 2020 free agency. There are going to be guys around the league who saw what Love was able to do as the second banana with LeBron James and see that, you know, he can step into the number one option, he can step down into a number two option. That's a guy who is more interesting to play with than a traditional number one guy who may not want to step into a number two role. And so, you know, I think there might be some attractiveness around the league for guys to come to Cleveland in free agency. Obviously, they've seen how Dan Gilbert is willing to spend for a championship contender. So there's no worries there that they'll get a couple years into a contract and then all of a sudden Gilbert's going to get cheap and not want to pay. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are good about the deal. That's why I would say it's probably, you know, in the B plus range.
I have the same grade, I think, for a slightly different reason. I think the money is maybe a tad bit high, but I think for the Cavs, they're keeping an all-star. They're keeping a face of the franchise. They're avoiding sort of the dreadfulness of the last post-LeBron era, right? They are not going to have nearly as bad basketball, the long losing streak like they had last time. And I think from a city perspective, from a franchise perspective, from helping your young guys develop, I think that's really valuable. My starting lineup is a little bit different because I think they need to lean into the development still. So I'm gonna get a little weird. I'm gonna go Colin Sexton, George Hill is my two, Jetty Osman at the three, Love, and then Nance. That is my five. I think you want your. Ooh. I think you want to just give. Maybe this is not something you do on day one. Maybe Sexton plays the first 20 games coming off the bench, but I think you want to get Colin Sexton and Jetty as many minutes as possible playing with Kevin Love. I think you want to maximize their time with him, get them reps along an all-star player, a guy who they can learn from on the court as well as off the court. I think that is really, really valuable. And I think if they do that, it makes me a little less likely to think they're going to make the playoffs. I think there's a pretty good chance they still end up as one of the 10 worst teams in the league. At the end of the year, it might be on the higher end of the spectrum. I think there's probably 7-ish teams that I'm like very, very sure will be worse than them. That should be maybe significantly worse than them. The Knicks, the Kings, obviously, the Hawks, some other teams. But I think there's a good chance to keep this pick. It would not shock me if 2 years from now there's a scenario where we look back at this and we say, okay, did the Cavs make the playoffs the last 2 years? No. But did they get value out of Kevin Love? Did they help Sexton and these guys come along? And then we say yes, and they still get their two 10 picks, and we say this was fine, right? I think there's a scenario where that happens, and now I think the Cavs certainly would rather make the playoffs. I think they'd rather maybe have 1 year where they keep the pick and then maybe make the playoffs in year two or something like that, and or at least be competitive and be on the fringe of keeping the pick. But it wouldn't shock me if this was the case where they were still top 10. And because I think it's worth noting, I think they're going to be awful on defense this year. They could have a really fun offense and do also. I think they're going to be like atrocious on defense, even if they try harder and are focused on that end. I just think they're going to be really, really bad on that end of the floor. But you can read Jeff's writing. He's got two pieces up at Fear the Sword if you're listening to this on July 25th. He has the cap breakdown and a look at what Kevin Love is going to be the number one option. You can find him at JG Siegel on Twitter. Early Bird Rights is your home for all the cap space as well as future draft pick breakdowns for what teams are going to go, including what the Cavs are going to go. And he's also writing a bunch of stuff now, I believe, at Forbes, I believe at Dime, and he writes at Beach Troops as well. Jeff, did I miss anywhere that you're writing now?
I still do Blazers Edge twice a month, and I write for Early Bird Rights in addition to the cap stuff that goes up as soon as transactions hit. But pretty much other than that, that's pretty much everything. I think that's six sites plus the salary cap stuff. So that's pretty much it. My dance card is full at this point for the coming year, and then I hope it's a good one. That's for sure.
Yeah. Are you ready for basketball though? I still feel like I need like, I know you're like you're like ready to flex on the gun. I could use like two more weeks to just like
chill. I mean I'm going on vacation for the next few weeks, so I guess I definitely need at least a few more weeks. But I could, you know, I once I was jumping back into film on Kevin Love, and then I was jumping back into film on Alex Poitras for Peachtree Hoops, it just sort of got the juices flowing of like, all right, I'm ready to get back into everyday film work and stuff like that, stuff that has sort of gone by the wayside as the cap stuff has taken over for July. It's you know, I still love doing the film stuff, and so it was very fun to sort of even just in a very short stretch get back into some of the film work.
Yeah, I think that's true. I just want like 3 weeks of like ability to watch the Premier League and the Bundesliga before like my life is consumed by basketball. I just want like 3 weeks of Tottenham and Dortmund viewing before I have to commit my life to like overanalyzing Jetty Osman like cutting off of screens and Colin Sexton's assisted turnover ratio and things like that. But check out Jeff.
For you that the Cavaliers are less disappointing than Tottenham and Dortmund will be this season. Look, I'm sure that they'll severely disappoint just like they always do.
Tottenham is not disappointing. Super fun. Dortmund, a little bit. I get to see Christian Pulisic play in his hometown this week, though, so that's pretty cool. But
yeah, that'll be one of the last times you'll ever see him in a Dortmund jersey, probably.
So yeah, he's nice. Going to get sold to Spurs, so it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine.
Sure. We'll go with that.
Yeah, he's gonna end up at Liverpool, and I'm gonna be like real angry about it because he's gonna like fit perfectly there and be awesome.
Yeah, he'd be great.
I'm playing for Klopp in the pressing. But enough about soccer. Go read all of Jeff's writing. Read all the stuff we have going on at Fear the Sword. And Jeff, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Jeff for coming on the show, and to you, the listener, for listening to Locked On Cavaliers. If you want to contact the show, as always, reach out at lockedoncavs@gmail.com. Find the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. And myself on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Writes. We'll be back again tomorrow with another episode breaking down the Kevin Love deal and talking a little bit about Larry Nance's extension as well. And stay tuned later this week when Mo Dockhill from thejumpball.net and then later this week Jordan Zerm from Eastman Cleveland will be on two other shows breaking down this deal and where the Cavs really go from here. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow. Cheers, y'all.